The course I took was a technical course. It qualified me to be an aircraft mechanic. And the Sacramento Air Depot there in Sacramento was just building up. So eventually they hired our entire class. And before that, though, a very important thing happened to me. My second year of college, the government offered a flying course to young men. So for the price of $9.50 for an insurance policy for my parents, I got a private pilot's license. It was in a Piper Cub, and you got exactly 35 hours, and you either passed or failed. Today, the requirement for a private pilot is still 35 hours. However, the average time for a pilot now to get to be a private pilot is up around 70 hours. There's so much more regulations and things to that.
Still 9.5?
I say?
Still 9.5?
Yeah. And I graduated. I'm a pilot. I didn't do much flying that summer, but I did take my dad up for a ride and a couple other things. And so we all went to work at the Sacramento Air Depot. And every guy in World War II knows where he was when Pearl Harbor happened, 7 December 1941. The Japanese attacked us at Pearl Harbor. And I can remember that we were working 24/7, and it was a Sunday. I don't remember the time of day, but it was the foreman came around and he says, "Hey, you, Bud Anderson, go home and come back at midnight for the graveyard shift. The Japanese would just attack us at Pearl Harbor." Oh, wow, now we're involved. So, I was still 19, and I had to wait one more month, January 13th, 1942, before I could sign up. And I went right there to the recruiting station at the Sacramento Air Depot and raised my right hand a few days later, and I was gone. I went off to the normal training which had in those days, primary, basic, and advanced. And I'm not going to go into detail about that, but I want to shorten up this talk. But I finally got my wings at Luke Field in Arizona. Still an active Air Force base today, 29 September 1942, got my commission, second lieutenant, and my wings. And somewhere in there, I always wanted to be a fighter pilot. Not sure where that came from, probably watching the newsreels of the Battle of Britain. And but on the other hand, I thought, you know, if I was in that airplane by myself, just me in that airplane, I would be responsible for everything. I'd be the pilot, the navigator, the bombardier, the gunner, the radio man. And I thought that would be an easier way to take care of my body during World War II. On the other end, I thought the fighters were cooler than the bombers. So those days we needed pilots everywhere, you know, instructors, fighter pilots, bomber pilots, you name it. We had a shortage. We were trying to build our Army Air Corps. We didn't have a U.S. Air Force in those days up to from almost zero to 225,000 pilots as fast as possible, and don't let safety get in the way of progress. One of the sad statistics of World War II, I think, is the fact that we killed more of our own pilots in training than we did in combat. So my first duty assignment was in the San Francisco Bay Area, where I went to Hamilton Field, but with a duty station at the Oakland Municipal Airport. And I flew the P-39 Air Cobras. We transferred, what the deal was, you were supposed to go to this fighter pilot replacement training group and get checked out in a fighter. It took about 3 months, and then you'd go someplace in the world and join a real fighter squadron. So my turn came up to go, and they said, "Oh, wait a minute, you, Bud Anderson, you're not going right now. You're going to a brand new fighter group that's being activated for World War II." Wow. I didn't realize the importance of this, but it was going to give me another training cycle. We were going to train this fighter group and then go overseas as a fighter group. And it would be good for promotion because I'd be on the ground floor, and it'd be good because I'd be one of the leaders and at least a flight commander, and that be in a position where you're supposed to get everybody involved in the fight. So we trained around, went to Tonopah, Nevada, came back to California, and made a couple more hops, and then went to Lander, Wyoming for our final training. And then we jumped in a troop train and headed for New York. Now, we wondered where we would go in those, because we're flying the P-39s still. And where were they? They were in the South Pacific, or they were in North Africa. So I don't know where, when it happened, but somewhere between getting on that troop train, getting on the biggest ocean liner in the world, and heading for England, we found out that we're going to get the brand new P-51 Bravo. The P-51 Bravo was the one with the Merlin engine in it. Now, we had heard about P-51s, but we had not even seen one, let alone fly one. And there's one firing up right over there. I think you can probably hear it. okay. And so how did we get checked out? We sent a guy up to the depot where they were being offloaded and found a crew chief to tell you how to start it, brought it back home to our base, and then checked out the next guy. It sounds like a lousy way to do it. Well, it probably was, but we didn't even have flight manuals for the airplane. But we had quite a bit of fighter experience, and so it really wasn't as bad as you might think. And then we got in the P-51, and we found out it was so much better than the P-39 that we were delighted and not complaining one bit. And I got another break because the group commander came to us and said, "Hey, bud, you're going to go to the Royal Air Force Central Fighter Gunnery School. You take a Mustang with you, and fly it in the course instead of the Spitfire." So I got 35 hours in the Mustang before combat. And by that time, I had about 900 hours of total time. So I was fairly experienced before combat.